I was wondering if people's local knowledge, say about the deer on the mountain or fish in the streams, was that helpful in getting a picture of the natural resources on the mountain?
It always is, and we welcome it. Some projects that I'm working on now, we love it when the public comes forward and says, you know, I got this information, I've got this bird list or wildlife sightings, and working on a project right now where local natural groups are helping us tremendously with that. So you always welcome that. I can't think of anything specific about it. Usually, although I think the user groups, the bikers and the hikers, brought us lots of information about the trails that they used and how they were used. Mm-hmm.
Was the stream keepers for Stony Creek?
Stream keepers, yes, would have been one of the groups. Steve's group, the Burnaby Mountain Preservation Society. There's some pretty keen, knowledgeable naturalists in Burnaby that we would have relied on for some information.
Oh, okay.
I think for a minute some names will come to me, but there's some key people that we would have contacted to, yes, gain some information. There was a pretty strong Vancouver Natural History Society, had a lot of information about wildlife on the mountain. Al Grass and his wife, strong naturalists. I think they lived in Burnaby and probably would have consulted them because I did know them. And George Clulo in Burnaby helped me tremendously on the Deer Lake project, and I probably would have chatted with him about wildlife in the park. So yeah, absolutely. It's critical getting that public in, because you can, yes, never have all the data you want.
Even though there may be not a lot of detailed information about the natural resources on the mountain, I was wondering if the staff of Parks and Recreation, would they have had some kind of institutional memory about the park that would put it into some kind of context for them? Was there kind of a general environmental history that staff would tell about the mountain?
I don't think so much from the Parks Department for much of the conservation areas. Like, park staff just wouldn't have been in the conservation areas largely. There wasn't a reason to be in there. We weren't managing trails and we weren't managing the forest. Staff knowledge would exist of the Burnaby Mountain Park proper, you know, mm-hmm, the grounds that we managed. I'm not remembering any of that.
Would the mountain have meant what would the mountain have meant to the Parks and Rec Department? Was it just a big headache, or?
No, I wouldn't say it was a headache. It would be an unknown. It would be, glad it's there. You know, it's a park, but it wasn't
something to be proud of.
It was, yeah, that we own it. It's part of our system, but it's not a park that we're familiar with. It's not a park. See, parks staff would have been more focused on managing developed parks and sports fields and more developed features. So we wouldn't have spent as much time on the Burnaby Mountain Conservation Area. So I don't remember that. I mean, having said that, you welcome in these planning processes when the community comes on board and there's some storytelling. I remember when we used, yes, to go there and picnic. I remember when that was logged, or I remember, you know, I used to drive my car down those roads. I mean, those kind of stories are great when the community does that. And that's part of why we hold public open house meetings for the process. I can't think of any one story at the moment where I can say this.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember one. I wish I could, because those are always, you know, it gives such a stronger sense of place.
It does, and it kind of reflects, those stories reflect people's values and practices.
Yeah.
And I guess one thing, because not only the parks is going through a transition, but there's transitions in how the people of Burnaby looked at the mountain too. And
mm-hmm.
did that, when you listen to their stories, would you find some stories were really consistent with, say, older ways of looking at the mountain? And then there'd be stories that were more expressive of sort of an emergent or maybe even surprising way of looking at the mountain.
I'm sure there were. There always are those. And like I said, you welcome those stories. I'm not remembering any particular one.
Did you find, you know, when as you've interacted with the public about Burnaby Mountain, that there in fact is a deep attachment to the place?
Bits and pieces. The strongest voice were the two user groups, the hikers and the bikers. That's probably where we spent most of our time. The general naturalist groups would have had our attention, you know, talking about preserving forested areas, about perhaps some rare or endangered or uncommon birds that are on the mountain. I think some residents in the Capitol Hill area had some conversations about access, ability to access the site that had been lost through just community development. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to have a stronger ability to be able to access.
It's because that was mountain. Something you mentioned that when you were growing up, that yeah. Burnaby Mountain was, it was there, but distant. it was distant.
Certainly stories would have come forward of some of people who used to do these things on the mountain but couldn't, or remembering how they used to use the mountain, mm-hmm. whether they camped over there for the weekend, whether they used to mm-hmm. Hike up one side and down the other.
Do you think that people bonded to the mountain through the kinds of things that they, the activities that they did on the mountain? That was primarily how they...
I think that's how people always do. It's by their own personal experience. You know, you value it because you had some experience there. It meant something to you because it was either part of your environment where you got to go play or use it in some way. It had some value to you. Mm-hmm. So those are pleasant stories to hear when you're doing planning work like that.
Yes.
And there was the other group, you're right, I think you mentioned before, was the Stony Creek Stream Keepers, because that's a pretty important water course coming down there. So I remember some dialogue with that group.
And again, these would be people that were actually being active on the mountain, too.
Yeah. There was some references to the historical uses sometimes. I can't remember specific stories, but just reflecting on, this mountain did have a history. It had a history of logging and even early settlement on the north shore side of it, facing Barnett. And I think we tried to pull out that history a little bit more.
Oh, during the planning process?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, the other debate now is the gun club site.
I know, that was an interesting one. Can you tell me about that?
That was a tough one. Well, gee whiz, boy, you're digging back into the far reaches of my mind. Gun club site, of course, that's part of the conservation lands, was an important site for RCMP gun practicing, gun shooting. It had a lot of historical uses as a recreational area. There was a Barnett Rifle Club, and I think there was another club that operated out of there and built a facility, so that was important to them. Mm-hmm. And there was the issue of all the lead shot in the ground and the contamination left from the years of use, and we had to do some monitoring to determine how much that was, and there was some remediation that had to be done as a result of the lead shot left on the hillside. And then there was the debate about, is a gun club and gun club activity compatible with a conservation site? And I think the sense was, no, it's not compatible, perhaps because it just represented shooting of things in a natural area. But I think there was more the sense that it was an uncomfortable noise. Just hearing the noise while you're in a conservation area was distracting or disturbing. It wasn't more than a noise. It was an incompatible noise with your purposes of being there in a conservation area. So I don't think these things bode well for keeping the gun club in the site.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think demand and use itself was decreasing. I think there was still a desire to see it there. So it must have led to some debate in our planning process and ultimately a decision not to keep it there.
Mm-hmm.
And we remediated the site and removed lead shot and dealt with the lead contamination that was getting into the creeks, if I remember rightly. Yeah. Interesting issue, eh?
Yes. And what do you think about the fact that now the site is for mountain bikes, it's a skill facility.
It's a skill facility, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Interesting evolution.
Yeah, interesting evolution. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a disturbed site. It was available for use and for consideration of what to do with it. And I think at that time, there was this growth in building in cities, these skill facilities, these mountain bike riding facilities. Burnaby was pretty keen to support the mountain biking community where they could, but without having impacts on the local area. And it seemed to be compatible with some of the trip mountain bike riding that was happening on the mountains and the growth of the sport generally. So I think it was compatible. Yeah.
I guess there was an alternate consideration to remediate it and or restore it,
right?
But I think it was by 2005 that the facility had been proposed and
but then
and,
yeah
yeah
I remember just the start of it in my time there. I remember it, yeah. I think it's compatible. I think it's appropriate use. Yeah.
I guess the other bonding of people of Burnaby with the mountain is just the pride that people take in it's a large park.
Yeah,
it's a big natural green space.
Yeah, and it is an icon for city. It is Burnaby Mountain. It is part of the community, right? And so whether you use it or not, I think it's still a reference point. There's Burnaby and Burnaby Mountain and Simon Fraser University there. Mm-hmm. So I think people value it even if they don't go there.
I wonder if the attraction of the mountain or bonding in some way has actually become more abstract and symbolic, maybe even spiritual in a way.
I guess for some people. I mean, why do you value something? Some people just value it knowing that it's there. Knowing mm-hmm. that it's there and I can use it tomorrow if I want, or I value mm-hmm. it because someone in my family uses it, or I know it provides ecological services to us, right? It's fresh air and clean water. Even if I don't go there, I'm still getting benefit from it. And like I said, it is an icon for some people, knowing that Burnaby Mountain is here in Burnaby. So
yes. I should ask what kinds of things that you and your family did on Burnaby Mountain. Did Linda and you and the kids go and use Burnaby Mountain?
We lived in Burnaby for many years, so it was one of the places we would go to. We'd spend a lot of...
Because you were living in Edmonds at that time, so...
Yeah, the Edmonds area. And we also lived in New Westminster for a while as well, too.
Oh, okay.
So besides going up the hill all the time to go to university, we would use it as a recreational place.
What kinds of things did you do?
Trail hiking, mainly. Trail hiking. I guess when the kids were young, we used to go tobogganing on the hill. That was
always
a favorite place to try and get up Burnaby Mountain and go tobogganing, you know?
I guess so. Steve mentioned that too.
Yeah.
So lots of people did that.
Yeah, and the staff used to actually have to have staff people on the road to manage the traffic because, you know, it wasn't snowing in Burnaby, but it would be snowing on Burnaby Mountain,
yes. Right?
So there'd be a real parade of people up there to go tobogganing. So that was wonderful. It used to be a great spot for stargazing. We used to go for that, in the mountain area, in Burnaby Mountain Park itself.
Mm-hmm.
Trail hiking, like I said, we had a dog get hit by a motorbike on that park at
yes.
one time. So maybe that drove me to making sure that the mountain was appropriately used. I'm not sure.
Yes.